Next up on Grant County Coronavirus Update, our co-producer Andrea Warner interviews Dr. Renee Dupre, professor of public health at New Mexico University who specializes in risk communication.
Welcome, Dr. Dupre. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Andrea. I'm glad to be here.
The reason why we asked you here today is to help us understand some of the numbers, the coronavirus numbers that we're hearing about in the news and in the daily reports from the governor. Right now in Grant County, we have 187 total cases and 3 deaths since the beginning of the pandemic, with only 68 reported recovered cases. Our coronavirus numbers have doubled since September, and we have 119 active cases in Grant County right now. Can you help us to understand these numbers and what it means for our county and our local Southwest region?
Well, I can try. And I want to remind us that this is an unprecedented situation, one that none of us have ever lived through before. And so that's why we really need to keep being open to learning and changing as things evolve. So I want to say, first of all, that Grant County has really done an admirable job of controlling COVID-19 until just recently. Those numbers that you just quoted represent the thing that concerns me the most, which is the rate of increase in cases. We've seen about a 70% increase in case numbers in Grant County in the last month, and 117% increase since September 4th. So what that tells us is we're heading the wrong direction. And we're still in the green as a county, but if you look only in the more populated areas of the county, especially Silver City, we can see that we're actually, quote unquote, in the red in terms of our rate of spread. So I think it's really important to recognize that we're not going the right way, and we need to think about how we can stop it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I've looked at those numbers and the changing colors on the DOH map, on the Department of Health map. I notice that there's a band of red that runs from El Paso through Las Cruces through Deming into Silver City. With these massive infection rates in our surrounding areas, and the fact that coronavirus hospitalizations have risen more than 100% just in the last week, how does that affect us right here in Grant County?
So, well, it affects us because of several reasons. First of all, we rely on some of those other more fully equipped and staffed hospitals to care for people here, not only for COVID-19 and coronavirus infections, but for other health issues. And we're increasing rapidly. But when we think about it, in our Southwest region, 73 out of 127 available ICU beds are occupied. So that means that we're at almost 60% occupation. So if we suddenly spike in our cases, and these hospitals that serve this bigger area can't accept us, we know right now, as of Sunday, El Paso has put in place, their civic center is now a kind of secondary alternate hospital because they're so overwhelmed with cases. And they've imposed a curfew at 10 p.m. in El Paso. Now, we know El Paso, that's going to be a little difficult to enforce, but that is what they've had to do in order to control it. So what that means for us in Grant County is when we have that heart attack victim, when we have that motor vehicle crash, that's usually where we send those people so that they can get care. And that's not available to us because those resources are overwhelmed. So it's really important for us to remember that we are a rural county. We have limited resources to care for someone who has one of those acute injuries or acute needs. And as other hospitals around the state are filling up, it's going to be harder and harder for Grant County residents to get the care they need if they get sick with COVID-19 or anything else. We also need to think about our primary care resources, like other rural areas. We're chronically understaffed, and most of our healthcare providers tend to be older. So they too are at risk. I cannot emphasize enough. I think we're up to 1,500 or close to 1,500 healthcare provider deaths in our country. That is just unconscionable. And we do not want a single one of those to be in our community. We need to protect our healthcare workers. So that's what I'm going to say. And that's how it affects us. In addition to just the simple fact that many of us travel back and forth between those places, whether it's to go to Trader Joe's to go pick up your bars of chocolate or whether it's for work. And anyway, any reason for travel between a hotspot and a non-hotspot is going to spread the virus.
Yeah, it's really scary. We're seeing the cases spread so quickly now. And like you said at the beginning of the interview, we were doing really well at the beginning of the pandemic in our local area. Can you share with us any insights you have on what happened since then that cases are spreading so quickly?
Well, I think it's a host of things. We have tried some reopenings. You know, as you know, one of the things our governor did really early was she saw it coming, said, we don't have a lot of healthcare resources compared to other states. I'm shutting things down. And that really made a difference for us. But that sort of blanket shutdown, while we didn't have much, made people really, really anxious. There were economic harms with it. There were other harms where people lost jobs, businesses have closed, but there are a whole host of other harms that come with a very, very necessary public health intervention. It's just like if you go take a pill, there are going to be side effects. So it's not a surprise to anybody that we've seen those things. But nobody ever thought that we would be needing to do this for as long as we have. And so we've seen some reopening of the elementary schools. We've seen some reopening of restaurants and other places. And plus, I think a lot of people are just suffering from pandemic fatigue. And they're not really paying attention to a lot of the guidelines. There's conflicting messaging and misinformation and disinformation that's coming from what would usually be very trusted sources. So that's generating a lot of confusion. But the virus is the virus. As one of my colleagues at health journalist Marilyn McKenna once said, never underestimate an opponent that has a 3.3 billion year head start on you. The virus is a wily opponent, and it's going to act as the virus does no matter what we do. Our behaviors can impact it. And that said, I want to talk a little bit about one of the things that we're seeing around spread of the virus, because it really does impact the way that we behave and how we might be able to actually get it back under control before it gets too bad here. One of the epiterms that's gotten a lot of attention over the last few months is something called R-naught. If you've read anything on COVID, you've probably seen the R with the little zero subscript behind it. Well, that's a way that that epidemiologists ask and say, so if on average, for everyone who gets sick, how many people does that infected person pass it to? And there's an average, right? Big average. So if you're infected by one person, right now it's at 1.19. So as you can tell, just very, very simple math, if that R-naught number is anything over one, it means we're getting more cases, right? So one person on average infected, spreading it to 1.2 cases. With, five cases, suddenly we're starting to build that exponentially. And remember, exponential basically means you just keep multiplying by two or by whatever the factor is. So that's why we're starting to see that rate go up. But there's another statistical number that epidemiologists pay attention to, and that can tell us a lot more about how we individually can shift our behaviors to slow the spread of the virus. And that one is the K factor. We can think about this as the what is it okay to do factor. That okay factor, or the K factor, it's a kind of fancy value, statistical value, but it lets us know how much of what statisticians call variation there is in the number of people who pass the infection to other. So another way of looking at that is the difference in how many people each person with the coronavirus infects. So if you have 5 people or 10 people who are infected, what we're finding is that 8 of those people actually don't pass it on to anyone. But 2 of those people pass it on to a lot of people. So then we get that average, which is back to the R naught. Okay. So, and here's the counterintuitive thing. If the K is small and the virus is still spreading, it means that there are more people who are called super spreaders, right? There are more people who are going to and doing these kind of events that where we see a lot of spread. And what epidemiologists and infectious diseases experts have found out is that those super spreaders can infect a whole lot of people. And there are certain activities, and this is what we've learned, that end up being super spreading events. Those tend to be the activities where we are gathered together. There's a lot of loud talking. Remember, airborne virus. We're breathing back and forth. People are, you know, I'll leave the masks for later because they are a factor and they do help, but they're not the be all and the end all. But when we're indoors, so for instance, some of the things that we really enjoy doing as human beings, which is going to a party, eating in a restaurant, singing in the church choir, those are the kinds of things that we're seeing really associated with spread. That's why the governor's latest orders limit what is called a mass gathering to 5 people or less if you're not all in the same household. And so we just have to remember, most people aren't infecting anyone else once they get sick with this, but a few are spreading it widely. And we can impact that by understanding that we can change our behaviors by avoiding those big gatherings, the church choirs, the indoor dining, and unfortunately, the family picnics and the things that we tend to do at holidays.
Yeah, I hear you saying that it's really each person's individual choices are really going to affect the whole of our community. And it's the choices that we each get to make or have to make, because some of them are hard choices. It's hard to decide not to go to the party, not to gather with your friends. And we just have to make those hard choices right now to keep our whole community, to keep those essential medical workers, and to keep the elderly safe. And, you know, we have Halloween and Thanksgiving. Just Halloween's on Saturday and Thanksgiving's just right around the corner. Can you talk to us about some ways we might think differently about those upcoming special days so that we can help slow the spread, crush the spread of the coronavirus that's gaining on us so quickly right now?
So absolutely, we need to work together, and individual behaviors are huge. We also need communal behaviors, and I'm just going to pull that back, that we've got personal responsibilities each one of us has, which is going into the grocery store, wearing your mask, pulling it up over your nose. Don't do the thing, well, they made me wear it, so now I'm going to pull it down around my chin, right? No, that's not being an individually responsible member of our community. So individual behaviors are really important. We also need collective and communal behaviors. So those two things come together, and some of those things are things that you and I as an individual can't control. I'm not developing a vaccine right now. I don't think you are. I'm not working on the newest, greatest test so that we can really test people and get results in 2 seconds. Those aren't the things I'm working on, but I'm working on my everyday behaviors that my household is working with. So I just want to emphasize that we've got a continuum of behaviors. Some of those are personal, and some of those are communal and community oriented, and some of them can only be done by our government. So it takes all of us. It's a whole of community response. That said, specifically in terms of holidays, Halloween's coming up on Saturday, as you said, and it could be a super spreader day if we don't approach it the right way. And what I'm encouraging people to think about is not that we're skipping these holidays this year, but we're doing them differently. So perhaps instead of our traditional trick-or-treating, where everybody puts their same hands into the candy bag and then the kids all share the candy, we can find safer things to do. Lowest risk activities are activities with household members, and those you're around all the time, so you're not mixing, right? Carve a pumpkin, do a treasure hunt, bake cupcakes, everybody dress up. You can find innovative ways to celebrate it alone. If you feel like you can take on a little bit more risk, a medium sort of approach to it would be, okay, we'll go trick-or-treating, but instead of having the one candy basket, we're going to walk masked 6 feet apart, and we're going to only, and if you're going to put out candy for anybody, please put it out in separate bags. Wash your hands before and after handling anything that you're going to be giving out to kids. Put it out at a table so people and kids don't congregate. We want to keep that 6 feet outdoors kind of things. Outdoors activity without a lot of talking, without sharing anything, especially food-wise, are the safest. Highest risk, please don't do it. The Halloween parties, the haunted houses, the hay rides, anything where people are crammed together and breathing the same air. So that's like our general rule. So let's think about it. What I encourage people to think about this Thanksgiving, instead of gathering around the table, do a family hike. Find ways that we can still celebrate the real meaning of these holidays. This may be a huge opportunity for us to move away from some of the commercialization of the holidays and the other things that many people complain about. And can we possibly think about reclaiming those holidays for our families and for our loved ones and make it a positive experience and a safe one as well?
Oh, those are great. Those are great points, Renee. Thanks for sharing those. I know this year we're going to be making caramel from scratch and making some caramel apples, and that's going to be our big Halloween excitement. And Thanksgiving, I think that we're going to be Zoom meeting with some family. I saw a really nice quote the other day on the internet that said, "Let's isolate now, so that when we can come back together, we're all accounted for." And that's what I'm going to be grateful for this year at my Thanksgiving, is that we can come back together with family after.
Absolutely. And ironically, the biggest act of love that you can give to your family members this year is to interact at a distance. Let's think about some of the things that we haven't done forever. How about picking up a pen and writing a real letter? How about, you know, sharing those actual physical photos instead of the digital ones? Let's think about some things that perhaps we haven't done for a long time, making a phone call instead of sending a text. So these are things, let's use it as an opportunity so that when we can come back together physically, we can do so safely. Hoping that by the holidays, we've slowed the spread, we've got faster, better testing, we can use more of the tools that we have, but it is going to take a concerted effort, not only from individuals, but from our local, state, and federal governments to work concisely together on the same page to develop the tools that we as Americans need to get back to work, to get back to our families, and to get back to safe, enjoyable life as the people we are.
Not to lose any more of our loved ones.
This is the largest tragedy any of us have ever lived through. And every single person who has been lost to this is a tragedy. And I include in those not only people who have died of COVID-19, but who've died because of COVID-19. Because they lost a job and committed suicide, because they couldn't get the care they needed when they had the heart attack or gotten the motor vehicle crash. And those are really, really critical. When we add those up, we're probably somewhere between 300,000 and 350,000 excess deaths for us this year. So that's a really, really sobering number. So let's do what we can. Remember the old prayer of Reinhold of Serenity to give us the wisdom to know the difference. That's what we need to do. And there are many things we can do to keep each other safe and to really show our love for our family members and our fellow human beings.
Once again, that was Andrea Warner speaking with Dr. Renee Dupre, professor of public health at New Mexico State University. Thank you for joining us on Coronavirus Update here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM, and streaming online at gmcr.org. You can visit our website, gmcr.org, for today's updates and links to resources as well as replays of today's and past shows. You can also visit our website at grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org, a clearinghouse of local, state, and federal information and resources to help keep you, your family, and our community safe in these times. While you're there, you can also join our mailing list to receive these updates via email, and don't forget to send us your updates to info@grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org or on Facebook at Grant County Coronavirus Update. Thanks once again for tuning in. Stay safe, be well, have a beautiful day, and we'll see you tomorrow.